This is Roland Chidiac Connects, a podcast about motivation and inspiration. Ever wonder what drives people to do what they do? Join me as I connect with a variety of people who have great stories to tell about what inspires them, ignites their passions, and leads them to make a difference in their work and the people around them. This is episode 35 of Roland Chidiac Connects, a podcast about motivation and inspiration. This evening, I have a special guest from Ottawa. And the reason why I say special, I will explain that a little bit later. But Megan Valois is with us this evening, and she's an educator in Ottawa. And she's going to tell us a little bit about what she does, her motivation behind her work, what inspires her. And we're going to talk a little bit about her family as well. So you'll get to hear a little bit about her reality and what her husband does and how it kind of all connects. So welcome to the podcast, Megan.
Thank you so much, Roland.
It's a real pleasure to have you, and I want to tell you why. So here's kind of my perspective on my connection with you. So number one, you live and work in Ottawa. Are you originally from Ottawa?
I am, born and raised.
Awesome. Okay. Me too. So that's our first connection. The second connection is you work at the high school that I went to for a couple of years, which is really cool.
That's right. I teach at St. Pius the 10th High School. And I actually remember when we first connected on Twitter that I went on a mission in my school library to find your photo in the school yearbook. I don't know if you remember that, but I distinctly remember that.
I do remember that, and I remember you tweeting me the picture from the yearbook, which is really cool. That was neat. But the third thing that you probably don't know is that you really kind of got onto my radar when I found out that you were working with Michelle Cordy to become like a Google certified educator. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I do remember that. I knew that we ended up connected through Michelle, actually, and I absolutely adore her. She's amazing. She was really formative in getting me started on my educational technology journey when I was first started getting my feet wet in it. And so I still pay a lot of credit to her, whether she knows it or not, for helping me out at the start of that journey.
Awesome. So that's how I just remember it was like during a summer and or something. I just remember it was hot out, and I remember reading the tweets between the two of you, and you guys were working together to like prepare yourselves for the tests and stuff like that. And I thought, oh, this is cool. And I love meeting people and connecting with people via the people that I have met face to face on Twitter and trust in terms of like their approach to education and their philosophy. So when I saw that you were working with her and she was working with you, I thought, okay, this is somebody that I should connect with. And we did, and it was awesome, and it's been great. But there's so much in common between the two of us that I thought it was really cool. And over the years, we've tweeted back and forth about all kinds of stuff, and I've really enjoyed that. And I remember when I asked you if you wanted to be on the podcast, I want to say you gave me a bit of a hard time, but like in a joking way.
Yes.
Am I correct?
You are. You've had so many amazing people on the podcast that I was honestly very humbled that you even suggested me, and felt a little bit out of place with some of these educational rock stars.
Well, that's interesting that you would say that, because to me, I have like a running list in my mind of people that I'd love to chat with. And I want to chat with each of them for different reasons. And one of the reasons I want to chat with you is because I'd love to hear about your journey with educational technology, number one. Number two, I want to know, like, you're a high school teacher at my former high school. So I just felt like connected there. Like, I wanted to hear that story. I wanted to hear how that came to be. I want to hear what it's like to be a high school English teacher. And then another part, a whole other aspect, is that your husband is in the military, and I know that he's been deployed in the past and he's been gone away for some time, and I wanted to talk to you about that experience. Like, how do you do your job? How do you live your life when you know that your partner is in another country doing the work that he does? I want to hear that. I want to hear that story as well. I want you to share that with us, because I think it's important that we talk about those things, especially these days with all the stuff that's happening in the world. I think his work is honorable, and I think that you being able to live that life and support him and just do your own thing and be a mom as well is like incredible. So that's my interest, and I think you're a rock star.
Oh, well, thank you.
No problem. But, and it's not, I'm open to talking to anybody on the podcast. So I'm honored that you would come on. I think it's great that you think some of the guests that were on are great. That's awesome. But it's my podcast, and I ask people that I want to ask to come on and talk with me. And so I'm just happy it's happening.
Well, I'm really, really pleased to be here. I'm really glad that we were able to connect way back then. Hopefully, eventually we'll meet face to face, because this is crazy. But yeah, to be able to come and talk with you today just about some of these things, because it's a lot of passions of mine all in one.
Okay, yeah, very good. So tell us about the work that you currently do.
So right now I am, as you said, a high school teacher, and I teach at St. Pius X in Ottawa. So I teach in the Contemporary Studies Department, which is history this year, as well as civics and careers class. I have a unique opportunity in that I teach what we call a sheltered civics and careers class, as well as in past I've taught the sheltered history. And what that is for our English language learners. So students who are new to the English language, who are coming to our school, and we offer these courses just for English language learners so that they have a little bit of a basis and a little bit more guidance in the subject area, because they don't have a background in things like Canadian history or Canadian geography or Canadian government. And so it really allows us to sort of approach it from a unique angle, being able to offer this as a first-time introduction to them. And then I also teach grade 11 university level English as well. So I've got my feet in both departments, the English department as well as contemporary studies.
I had no idea that you worked with ELL students. None.
Yes, I do. And it's such a privilege, and it's so rewarding. I have taught students who have been in Canada for anywhere from a few days to a few months to a few years.
I am currently taking the ESL Part 1 AQ course, because I feel like in the past few years, I've had this influx of ELL students that I've worked with. And it's like, I just woke up one morning and I was like, I need to do something here to help these kids. I don't feel like I'm being as effective as I could be. And last year, at around this time, a student joined my class who was from Syria, a Syrian refugee. So, wow, I'm going to pick your brain a little bit more about that later, because I'd love to hear about your experience with those students. And do you feel like, how do you feel working with kids that are new to the language? Like, did it frighten you, so to speak, when you started working with them? Or is it a natural thing?
Yeah, there's definitely a bit of an intimidation factor there, because you're one of their go-tos for their basis in this brand new language. And so you don't want to mess up. You want to be doing the best you possibly can. And because it's not just learning a new language, it's integrating to a new culture, coming to a new country, maybe without some of their family. And so it's almost kind of a self-imposed pressure to really do the absolute best you can. Not that we don't always try to do the best we can for our students, but in such a unique way, because it's not just the teaching and the lessons, it's really making them feel at home in Canada. And so that was something for me that I tried to be cognizant of all the time, was this is not only an education thing, but this is also a social thing and an inviting environment for these students as well.
Mm-hmm. So tell me, what got you into education? When was it when you decided in your mind, I think I want to be a teacher?
As long as I can remember. Honestly, the joke is that I don't know how one of my best friends put up with me as a child, because every time we would get together to play, we'd be like, I'd say, okay, we're playing school. I'm the teacher. You're the student. Okay, sit down. Here's your math problems. And I would literally make her do basic addition and subtraction and pretend she was a student. And I was doing this from the time I was in probably first grade. And so obviously that became sort of more refined as time went on, it was less about sort of playing the role and like thinking that, you know, being in school would be fun, to actually, as I went into high school, really observing and understanding what my teachers were actually doing, what their role was, what their purpose was, their responsibilities and their impact. And then looking at it from that perspective, saying, I want to have this impact. I want to motivate students. I want to inspire students. I want to be the one that they look back and say, I remember that she taught me this, or I remember that we did this, and this changed my, you know, view on English, or this changed the way I perceived this, or it changed my writing abilities, or helped me think critically. And just be able to have that kind of lasting impact on someone where they look back and say, yep, she changed the way that I am, because I had that from teachers. And I was really, really lucky that I had so many amazing teachers, and so many of them I can go back and give actual things that they helped me with, that they like changed for me. And so it was really sort of in those high school years that I cemented the idea of, yep, I'm definitely going into teaching. And it was because of those experiences with those teachers.
Being a high school teacher, how often do you have students come back and see you and tell you how they're doing in college or university or whatever it is they've decided to do?
You know what, the especially neat thing about the way that technology has changed and things like that is that I think that I get to see even more of that and hear even more of that because of technology. So we do still get several students a year who drop in to come say hi. Already this school year, I've had three visits from three different students who graduated in different years. But then there's also the ones that email me or that reach out to me on Twitter, send me an email, send me a message to let me know how things are going. And I love that. I love being able to hear how things have gone, what they're doing. The fact that some of the students that I've taught are now in teachers college doing their Bachelor of Education, and they are going to be teachers next year. And that's really neat to sort of see that come full circle. And so it is actually quite common to have students come in, at least a few a year, just to drop by, say hi, and let you know how they're doing.
You know, being an elementary school teacher, I rarely get to see people come back. I mean, the grade eights, when they go to grade nine, they may come back and drop in to see their grade eight teacher. And then, you know, as they're walking the halls, they might poke their head in and say hello. But I never, like, my perspective is one that once kids leave, I don't usually see them again. But at the same time, I never considered the whole technology piece, the social media piece, like, because I work with younger kids, right? So I'm not going to connect with them via email and via social media, like I would if I was a high school teacher and then they went off to university. So that's a really neat consideration that I had never thought of. But that's got to be cool, right? To hear from these kids and hear about what's going on with their life and kind of what they're up to.
Yeah, it absolutely is, because then you see sort of that more far-reaching impact, and you see how they grow as individuals and the way that they change and what they become. And some of them did really well in school and, you know, continue to do well. And occasionally you'll get a student come in and say, "Ooh, you know, miss, I really could have done a lot more in high school. I, you know, really didn't put my best foot forward, but you'll be really happy to know that I'm now doing, you know, insert whatever here, and, you know, going to college or doing this or doing that." And it's nice to hear that they found success in what it is that they're doing, because that's always nice when you sometimes wonder how some of them are going to do, if they're going to be okay. And when they come back and say, "Yeah, you know what, things are going well and I'm doing okay." And so that's really nice to see as well.
Now tell me, if you weren't a teacher, what do you think you'd be doing?
You know, I contemplated for many years in high school as I went through all those courses what I was going to do, and it was the constant jumping back and forth between teaching and law. I think I would be a lawyer if I wasn't a teacher.
Okay, and what did you study in your undergrad?
I did a history undergrad, so I did an honors degree in history, and then my minor was in languages, French and English.
And where did you go for your undergrad?
I went to Acadia University in Wolfville, Nova Scotia. Really small school. You might not have even heard of it. There's only about around 4,000 students when I went there.
Oh, I've heard of it, all right.
Oh, yeah?
I've heard it's a really cool place to go. Yeah, for sure.
It is. It's now, very nice.
I went to Carleton for my undergrad.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. The reason why I asked you about that is because I studied law at Carleton, so I just wanted to know if that was kind of one of the routes you took to teachers' college, but I guess not.
No, it wasn't. No, I went to Acadia because I wanted to get away from the city. And it's funny because I was going to say big city, and then people who live in like Toronto or Vancouver would laugh at me. But to me, like, Ottawa was, you know, a fairly big city. It's a city. And I just wanted to go away, like, somewhere small, somewhere quaint. I wanted to have that sort of small town feel. And so when, we actually went on a family vacation, out on the East Coast, because my mother had been born out on the East Coast. And so one summer we went for a drive and we were like off-roading off a highway. And because this is what my parents like to do. So we were driving through all these little towns and I saw the sign for Wolfville. And I said, "Hey, Wolfville, that's where Acadia University is. Mr. Ronberg went there, who is one of my teachers." And I said, "Let's pull off and stop and see." So we did. We pulled off. And we walked around the campus and just took a look. It was in the summer, so there weren't really many students there, and just did an informal walk around. And I got back in the car, and that very day I said, "This is where I'm going to university."
Those moments are so cool, aren't they?
They really are. I just felt like I was meant to be there.
Did you do your Bachelor of Education there as well?
No, I did not. I came back to the University of Ottawa to do my Bachelor of Education.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Wow. I love hearing those stories, you know, about your experience of seeing this university and then thinking in your mind, "This is where I want to go." Those, they solidify for me the fact that people can set goals even before they know how to set goals, kind of thing, and then go after them. So it's really neat that that was one of the things you got to do that you had thought about when you were younger. So it sounds like you're a pretty determined person. You know what you want, you go after it. Telling us your story about how you became a teacher and the fact that you had considered it from a young age. And then telling us, you know, that you were out east and, you know, you saw the school that you had a connection to through a teacher. And then next thing you know, you're thinking, "This is what I want to do." So then let's move kind of into a more general topic around motivation and inspiration. What would you say generally motivates you day to day?
I think it's making a difference, and knowing that I'm having an impact on people and on people's lives. And I always try to put it in that sort of context. And I know this might be a little cliche. I love quotes. I'm such an English teacher in that way. But I saw this really awesome quote not that long ago by a guy named John Gordon. And I actually shared it on my Instagram. And he said, "It's amazing what people will accomplish when they know you believe in them." And to me, that's sort of like my whole motto and my whole mantra when it comes to teaching, is just showing kids what they're capable of, showing them the potential within themselves, and just asking them to find what is their strength and what is their passion and their purpose, and to like harness that and to take that out of them and sort of build on it and enhance it and help them to develop it. And so I think that at the end of the day, is what really inspires me, is to try to just push them to be a little better every single day than when they walked through the door, which is what I try to do as well, because my goal for myself is to every single day be just a little bit better than I was the day before. And we all have days when we're not. We have off days and days where it's a step back, and some days it's two steps forward. But if I try to keep that at the forefront of my mind, knowing that I'm making a difference and I'm trying to push them towards improvement, then that kind of helps with my mindset of what I'm trying to do at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. And now I'm looking at your Instagram account, and there are lots of photos of you pumping iron, of you working out, eating well.
I shouldn't have referenced Instagram.
No, I'm glad you did, because it opened the door wide open for me to go down the road of, like, you're really working on yourself. Like, you were really taking it seriously by eating well, by exercising. How do you find the time to do all that?
You know, it is hard. The program that I follow is 30 minutes, three times a week. And it really all came out of the fact that last year I fell. And it was just it was a silly little fall. And the way that I landed, I broke my arm. And the place that I broke it meant that I had to be in a full wrist all the way up to halfway through my bicep cast. And I was in this for like 4.5 weeks, 5 weeks, and then in a splint. And I thought, like, wow, really? Like, I can fall and I can break bones just from something like that? I need to take my health more seriously. And it's not a major health scare like some people have, but I thought, seriously, like, I just broke a bone falling? That's a little bit ridiculous. And so I thought, no, you know what? I'm going to try to get healthy. I want to try to make health a priority and really push myself to be like, in a good place, like healthy wise. And so that's why I decided to really focus on the good eating, even though it's super convenient to just grab that fast food or, you know, pour that bowl of cereal or whatever. Decided that I wanted to try to make a conscious effort to eat healthy, that I wanted to make a conscious effort to like work out and do that exercise, so that I was feeling more healthy. Because I think then you feel more energized, you feel better all around. And then that also translates into the rest of your life and your job and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, good for you. That is inspiring. Like, when I see your photos and I interact with you about what you're up to, it's inspiring, like, to see someone do what you're doing. And you're not the only one that I see doing it. And it's not made a huge impact on me to get me moving, but I just feel like, you know, people who set goals and go after them, there's something about that that really motivates and inspires me to watch other people do it. And then to use that when I need it, I guess. It's kind of weird, but it works for me. So as I'm scrolling through your Instagram photos, then I've seen a couple of your husband. And so I think now it might be a good time to dive into your family and talk a little bit about how this works to be married to someone in the military who has deployed. And I don't know how long a deployment is. Maybe you can tell us your experience, but how do you deal with that, with the fact that your partner in his line of work can be sent away for a certain amount of time to do his job?
Yeah, absolutely. So my husband Travis has been with the Canadian Armed Forces for just over 15 years now. So it's been a large part of his life. He was first in the reserves, And then he transferred to the regular force, which is what he's been doing since I knew him. And back in 2010, he deployed to Afghanistan as a part of Operation Athena. And he was there from May until December of that year. But a deployment is never just the day you get on the plane to go to a different country and then come back. There's always that before and after that goes along with it. And so he spent 2 months in the Mojave Desert doing training for the climate in Afghanistan. And then before that, he was in Petawawa, where he was doing training activities with the Royal Canadian Regiment, which is the battle group that he was going to be deploying with. So in the end, while he was only deployed from May till December, it ended up being sort of a little bit longer than a year, because he was in Petawawa and then, like I said, in California and then to Afghanistan. So it ended up being about a year of separation on and off during that time. It was very challenging at first because it was the first deployment that we had gone through together. And so this was very different for me. This was not something that I was accustomed to. My grandfather had served in the Canadian Forces during World War II. My dad had done a brief stint in the Navy, but I wasn't an Army brat by any stretch of the imagination. He had changed careers by the time I was born. So it wasn't something that I was accustomed to or I had been exposed to a lot. And so the separation part was a challenge in and of itself. But then, as you mentioned, when you're looking at someone being away, but not only being away like on a vacation or on normal business travel, but someone who is working 12 to 14 hour days on a shift, and their time difference is different than ours, and their communication isn't as easily accessible as ours. And there's the, you know, chance of him being outside in the field where there is, of course, problems that happen and deaths and injuries do occur. And so that adds a whole extra level of sort of stress to the situation, knowing that these types of things are happening and is part of the reality that is there. And so it just became that I kind of had to compartmentalize and not really think about it, which is hard for me because I'm a thinker and I'm an overthinker and I'm a worrier. And so I had to really sort of separate that and kind of go with the no news is good news sort of mentality and assume that all is well and be happy to hear from him when I could. And he was really great about checking in when he could and letting me know and writing me letters and calling when he was able to. Technology has changed that as well, because access to email was a huge perk as well during that time. And so I can't even imagine how people in the 80s or 90s in those deployments, what those wives went through. And so I really threw myself into work, definitely, because it was something that kept me busy, kept me occupied, and something that I loved and I was passionate about. So that helped. But it's also knowing that your contribution is appreciated and that the Canadian Forces does recognize the contributions of the family who are at home. And, you know, they do often say the strength behind the uniform, and that knowing that he was serving a greater purpose and he was contributing to our community and our country. And I was really, you know, thankful and privileged that I could say that we, you know, at the time he wasn't my husband, but that this was my partner and that this is what he was doing.
Did you belong to any kind of support group or some kind of network that you could go to, like, to talk to people who were in the same situation as you?
Yeah, so the Military Family Resource Center, the MFRC, is a great resource for military spouses. I actually ended up volunteering with them in the summer in their youth program because I thought, well, I'm off in the summer and I'm a teacher and I work with kids all the time. So what better way to stay involved and sort of pay it forward and make some connections with other military spouses than, you know, volunteering there? Again, thanks to the internet, there was opportunities to converse with military spouses online through like websites and support groups and things like that, connecting on Twitter. And so that was really great too, because I was able to connect with some other people, girlfriends, wives, fiancés who are in the same situation, and sort of establish some friendships there and be able to be each other's support through that. And some of the girls that I met while our significant others were deployed at the same time, I still keep in touch with to this day. And we're now like 7 years later.
Very cool. Now, I know that you're a mom, you have a child. Has your husband been gone for any extended period of time since you've had a child?
Well, I'll tell you, when you have a 3-month-old, 3 weeks feels like a very extended period of time. He left for a course in Europe, and it wasn't a deployment, but it was a course that he needed to take when my son Ethan was just about 3 months old. And boy, that was certainly a reality check for me, having to no longer have a co-parent there with me day in and day out, especially because he's my first child. And so everything was like learning as I went. And that was definitely overwhelming. I'm stronger for it, but at the time I thought, oh my goodness, how am I going to make it through these 3 weeks? Because I don't even know what I'm doing by my, like, even when we're both here, we're like, what are we doing? We're parents of a 3-month-old. So when he was gone, and being so far away and with a time difference, and it makes it hard to communicate because he's on a different schedule, working such long hours, that definitely felt a little bit isolating. I was definitely happy when he came back. He's done a few other little trips here and there to different places since then, but nothing extended. And I'm very grateful for that at this time. We are very lucky in that we haven't had to move around the country a lot. He hasn't done a lot of extended travel. And I know that there are some people who are, so I am very grateful for that.
Well, let's not downplay any time that a partner is away, right? Like, I know I've never gone away for very long. And when I have, it's been for like a week and the kids weren't that young. But like, I know when my wife has to go somewhere or I have to go somewhere, it's still tough. Like, just because you're so used to doing it with a partner that when you don't have that partner, it's like you got to pick up the slack where they would normally pick it up, you know? So I think it's funny that, you know, you mentioned that it wasn't a deployment, but still you were alone and 3 months old. Like, that's crazy. That's still kids learning how to sleep and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. So good for you.
Well, thank you. You're right. We hit the sleep regression, his very first sleep regression. Like, Travis was no sooner out the door. I'm like, the door wasn't even closed. And we hit that lovely 3-month sleep regression. And so it literally was like every hour. And I thought, oh my goodness, is this parenting? Is this really what it is? And so all the parents, obviously, who I know in my life were like, yep, we understand. And so that's nice. And that's another nice thing about the education community is that we don't just rely on each other for like education support. And I'm sure you find this as well, that when we sort of, it might start with educational related things, but then we get to know each other. And then if there's like times of, you know, difficulty, like illnesses or, you know, struggles or things like, you know, spouses having to travel or things like that, people are always there to listen and they always want to be there to support you and offer up help, even if it's like far away and just to be an ear. And so it was really nice that I did have a lot of people who were saying, like, if you need anything, just let me know. And I think that's another amazing thing about the education community is we do support each other like that.
I agree with you. I feel that, you know, when you're not caught up in the day-to-day things that happen in a school, and I don't know about you, but the minute I get to work, it's on and it doesn't stop until I get in my car. And even then, you've still got a lot of stuff, you know, in the back of your mind, things to do, but at least you're driving away from the building and you're kind of transitioning to something else. When I'm not in the middle of that kind of hecticness, I do think about how fortunate I am to be part of a family of brothers and sisters who, we all have something in common and we're all ultimately there to help people. And that includes our colleagues. So I do totally understand what you're saying. It brings back a lot of good and bad memories of being a new dad and having to go to work every day without too much sleep because of, you know, babies requiring all kinds of things in the middle of the night. It's always the middle of the night, right? But yeah, I totally understand. And I want to thank you for sharing your story about your husband being away and how you dealt with it. I think it's important for people to hear about the things that go on in our lives when we're not in a classroom teaching. We're people too, right? Like we experience things that are easy and hard, and we bring that to work with us sometimes for good or for bad. So I appreciate it. And, you know, please do thank your husband for his service. I'm appreciative of it. And I know, I don't think I know anybody who has told me that they're not appreciative of our fighting men and women who, you know, work for us and take care of us and protect our country. So thank him for that, please.
Well, I will. Thank you so much for those kind words.
No problem. So we're nearing the end of our time together on the podcast. But before we go, I want to ask you what you would say to someone who you know who isn't feeling motivated or isn't feeling inspired and kind of comes to you looking for something. What might you say to them to get them going, or what might you suggest to kind of help them set themselves up so that they could find motivation or inspiration?
I would say to get out of your comfort zone. I would say don't wait for opportunities to come to you. Seek out opportunities. And that just goes back to my own experience with Twitter and with the EdTech community online. Was I was thinking, well, you know what? What can I do? Like, I didn't even have an idea about all the possibilities that were out there, but I just wanted to be doing something different, trying something, making things more engaging for students, empowering students. And so I had signed up for Twitter probably a year or two before and just didn't really use it. And then I decided that maybe I'd start looking to see if I could find some stuff about using technology in the classroom. And boom, I just found this amazing online community with all these unbelievable educators who were doing things that I couldn't have even dreamed at that point in my wildest dreams. The innovation was unbelievable. And I started looking to these people and thinking, like, I want to be like you. Like, I want to do what you're doing. I want to make my classroom innovative and engaging, and I want to transform it into totally different ways and implement these things. And so I really found, I sort of say with some of my educational girlfriends, my tribe, online, because I started connecting with people and it's such a welcoming community. No one's like, oh, you're new. Oh, you're not doing this. Oh, you still do this. Oh, well, no, like you can't sit with us, you know, mean girl style. Everyone's like, what can we do to help? What can I show you? What can I share with you? Have you tried this? You should really try this. You should do this. And the more I put myself out there, the more I was embraced by people and the more people were willing to help me and show me things and collaborate. And so I really credit my professional learning network online with a lot of what I've become as a teacher. And one of my goals for 2017, and we're a month in and I already have not fulfilled it, so this is embarrassing, but is to start blogging more. Because I do have my website, which is so empty right now because I haven't been updating it because I've been focused on so much else. But one of my favorite blog posts that I did on my website was about my professional learning network. And I wrote just sort of like a little bit of a reflection on there, saying basically that I need the people in my professional learning network to know just what an amazing impact that they've had on me and on my life and the things that I'm doing in education and the way I see education and things like that. And the blog post was called, like, to my PLN, what I need you to know. And I just took the time to share with them the ways that they impacted me. And so I really think that if you're not finding what you're looking for in your school or in your district or whatever the case is, that you should reach out and go online and see if you can find people who are doing the things that you're doing or trying things that you want to try, because it's always great to get new perspectives and meet new people and try things that maybe you hadn't thought of. And it's really seeing amazing educators in action every single day that keeps inspiring me and motivating me to keep doing new and innovative and fun and creative things with my students.
Thank you very much for sharing that with us. I love it. Get out of your comfort zone. It is such, people might already be feeling like they're down or they don't know what to do. And then you're like, you know what? Get up and get out of it. You got to feel uncomfortable in order to get or find a zone of comfort. You know what I mean? And as you were talking about that, that's what I kept thinking. It's almost like you got to force yourself to do something different or to do something that you're not 100% good with in order to become 100% good with something.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what it is. And, you know, fear of being, you know, fear of failure or fear of being not good enough or all those things are just going to hold you back from what you want to do. And so if you're feeling like, I really just want to try something different, I'm just not motivated, I'm not really inspired, it's just day in, day out, blah. The only way you are going to become re-inspired or re-motivated is taking a step in a different direction. And it can be as simple as one small step. And you'd be surprised at where that leads once you take that first step.
Mm-hmm. If people want to connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
Well, you can definitely find me on Twitter because I'm quite active there. It's at Ms. MS Valois, VALOIS. You can also find me on my professional website, which does need some work, www.meganvalois.com.
Excellent. It has been a real pleasure talking to you on the podcast, and I appreciate you taking the time. And I, even more than you taking the time, I appreciate you letting me. I feel like I kind of twisted your arm. I kind of was like, no, let's do this. Let's talk on the podcast. And you've been a really good sport the whole time. So thank you for that.
No, thank you very much. This has been, like I said, in the sense you twisted my arm in the sense that it was, you've interviewed amazing people, as I said, and you are an amazing person. And ever since, like you said, I ended up meeting you through Michelle, I've been blown away with all the stuff that you do. And so it's kind of easy to be intimidated when there's someone so awesome on the receiving end, just wanting to feel like, you know, that you actually have something to offer. And I guess maybe that's a little self-deprecating, but I was very, very honored and very humbled when you said that you wanted to chat.
Well, I'm glad you did it. And the feelings are mutual. You're doing a lot of amazing things. You told me this evening about some of the things you're doing that I didn't even know you were doing that I think is wonderful. And like I said, even like aside from your professional life, in your personal life, you're like, you're rocking it. You're setting goals. You're going after them. And it's like, what is there to not love? You know what I mean? That's all awesome stuff. So I'm glad that you could share that information with the people that listen to this podcast. And now that, you know, we've done this, it's like, it'll live on forever. So I'm looking forward to hearing people reflect on our talk and connecting with you so that they can learn with you and, engage you in back and forth conversation about education or whatever it is that they feel they want to connect with you about. So awesome. I'm really glad we did this and enjoy the rest of your evening.
You as well. Thank you again so much.
You're welcome.